Welcome to Memphis Metropolis on WYXR 91.7 FM. I'm your host, Emily Trenum. Memphis Metropolis is all about our city as an urban place, including its neighborhoods, buildings, pathways, and parks, as well as the people who shape it. Join us each week as community leaders and commentators talk with me about our shared built environment. Welcome back to Memphis Metropolis and WYXR 91.7 FM. I'm the host, Emily Trenum, and this program, my guest is Neil Strebig. Neil is a reporter at the Commercial Appeal, and he covers real estate, economic development, and writes a column, appears every week, called Main Street Memphis, and I've been reading his coverage for a while, and I'm interested in real estate and thought it'd be fun to have Neil on to talk about some of the big real estate stories from the last couple of years, you know, focused on development and redevelopment in the city, and then also kind of looking ahead to what some of the trends are. So welcome to the program, Neil.
Happy to be here. I appreciate you making the time and reaching out. So,
well, you wrote a column recently. The Commercial Appeal ran a story asking some of the reporters what some of their favorite stories of the last year were, or some of the stories that they felt were most impactful. And I wanted to start off with one that you wrote about, which was really the need for more convention-sized hotels here in Memphis, and why not having more than one of those is kind of, I don't want to say sets Memphis back, but is a hotel like that is needed, another hotel, at least one like that is needed. So elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely detrimental. The story definitely explores that, kind of the issues of small hotels. And the start of that particular story too, I focus on the Durbin building, which is going to be turned into a day-room Holiday Inn Express. And again, not to criticize the development there.
At least it's being redeveloped. It's vacant for so long.
For sure. It's, you need that sort of progress, but it definitely explores, are the sub-200-room hotels helping or hurting Memphis? And again, I'm sure we'll go into kind of the inventory Memphis has with historic buildings and, the positives and negatives there. But the convention center hotel issue is nothing new. Actually, before we started recording here, I was looking up some old stuff as well. And I covered the hotel issue and the pipeline issue with the Daily Memphian as well before I came over here to Commercial Appeal. But my predecessor, both the DM and here at the CA, Tom Bailey, he wrote a story in 2016 discussing the same issue. At the time, it was basically 250 was the target range for hotels and that kind of need there. Fast forward now, it's 2024, only a couple of days into 2024, but still, you're looking at about 350 room hotels as the target space for that, for convention center space. And
so I think what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that for to attract really large conventions, It's not how many hotel rooms you have necessarily, although that's important. It's the actual size of these giant hotels that have conference rooms and have full service restaurants. And is that right? Am I describing that situation
it's
right?
It comes down to meeting space ultimately.
Meeting space, okay.
Yeah, you look at Nashville and the convention center they have there and the adjacent hotel space. We have the Sheraton here next to the Renaissance, but we don't have enough space over there, and that is outdated. Now, they are going through updates on that particular project, but from my understanding, the ongoing issue is you need basically another hotel in close proximity that can accommodate 350 rooms and all that convention center meeting space, which the Grand Hyatt was essentially supposed to do with the convention center space, and I forget the exact total square footage there, but that's the amenities you need. Of course, the full service side of things is kind of one-stop shop, meeting space, restaurant, and then the rooms.
So what are some of the reasons, why we haven't been able to attract? I mean, I'm with you. I remember there's been coverage of this online, coverage in the news quite a bit. Is it like land acquisition, or of course interest rates are a big factor right now, but what are the different factors? Low real estate values in Memphis? I mean, it's probably complicated, but tick off some of the reasons why we haven't gotten one, something that we obviously need.
No, for sure. I mean, it's definitely a compounded issue. It's not just one factor by any means. I think the big thing out of the gates is, of course, the interest rates have been financing, you know, a 300-room hotel right now is difficult in itself. That's not unique to Memphis. What was it? The Lodging Association's convention, what was it, 2022? They discussed this in great detail, and basically was every bank was shutting down financing at that point in time. Again, that's not going to necessarily get significantly better anytime soon, especially not in the first quarter of 2024, looking at possible recession or at least some declines in financing. So that's definitely an issue there. I mean, of course, space, and in Memphis's particular case, it's look at the Grand Hyatt One deal. So that was the closest we kind of got in recent memory, taking the Lowe's and the Hard Rock Hotel out of the equation there. But that's still about a mile away from the convention center. We have nearby space there. 100 North Main is a little bit closer, but that's its own beast entirely for sure. Then, of course, the Lowe's deal, you know, that was before my time here in Memphis, but I do think that that was strictly the pandemic. I think Lowe's was kind of a want more than a need to be here. And then, of course, you restrict budgets and going to the pandemic, I think that was one of those things to where, hey, this is going to cost money, and who's ever going to cost us money, and that deal got pulled there, but it was unfortunate timing nonetheless.
Yeah, that's the one I think I was a little more aware of because it's so close to the hotel, it's so close to the convention center. So it doesn't sound like there's anything in the pipeline. I mean, in a minute, I want to talk about some projects that are sort of, big projects that are kind of on hold. It doesn't sound like there's anything really on hold. There's just nothing. The two deals that were there no longer are really, they're not active in any way, as far as you know. I realize you're not.
I mean, we can dive into to that.
Well, I have other things to ask you about, so let's not go too much into the weeds.
Things being on hold, I do think that's, even though there's not shovels or construction going on property, doesn't mean this thing's not getting done. You know, the pinch districts, you know, always a big factor. That always gets a lot of attention. Same thing with the walk off of Union Avenue. And there's a lot that goes behind the scenes that I don't think folks quite always understand. And I should say, you know, readers don't understand. Incentives are necessary here in Memphis. That's a big thing. It's not necessarily free money. It's to get capital going, to get movement. But the permitting process takes time. And again, all the factors too with the actual economy and the fiscal side of things. It takes time to secure the finance before any shovels actually start breaking ground.
Well, let's talk about just about those two projects. Just, and I think on some level, remind people a little bit. So the Pinch District is a large multi-building redevelopment of that whole neighborhood, and it's been planned for a while. The property's been acquired.
Total of about 607.
I think LRK did the design, a lot of their design. It's some beautiful renderings. And so that project's on hold, and it sounds like a lot of it is the economy.
Yes, and again, you know, the developer there, Tom Intrude, and his firm, 18 Main, I mean, they have quite a few projects in, you know, the works. You know, you look at, you know, Billy Orville, Kevin Woods, Adam Slovis, one's worked at 100 North Main. I mean, they also, too, you look at how many projects they have going on, and different, but look at 100 North Main being the big one, how long that's taken to get to a point of this demo.
Right. Well, let's just talk for a minute about, I hear what you're saying about projects that aren't moving, because I do want to talk about 100 North Main, some things that are moving now that haven't, you know, have been on hold for a while. Yeah. So, and the walk is, that's a huge project. It's really right off Union, close to downtown, and encompasses, again, just to remind people, because, you know, this was announced pre-COVID, and the land was assembled, a lot of buildings were torn down, and that's apartments, I think there's a hotel there, there's a lot of retail, that's on between Union and Beale, and from what I've heard, it's still happening.
They have until end of this year then to secure financing for the first phase of construction, basically. It'll be all vertical construction and the hotels and everything else going on. Again, easy to criticize when nothing's, you know, you don't see any movement or shovels. Same thing in the pinch scenario. I don't think people see necessarily construction going on, so it's like, hey, when's this happening?
Well, I'm not criticizing. I'm impatient to see that. I think those are both great projects, and would love to see them. So that's not my intent at all. I'm just like eager to
being general with feedback I give.
Yes,
from readers and usually the comments and questions I get with certain projects on that. And I think from my vantage point, at least, you know, being out of markets and, you know, not a native Memphian by any means, slow movement is nothing new, I think. So I think perhaps from my vantage point, you know, I'm used to projects taking longer. And one thing I will say with Memphis that is very, very unique, there is definitely a lack of state funding that comes through for a lot of these projects. So that is good and bad. Things will take longer for sure. You know, developers have enough private capital and investors, they can maybe get things moving faster. But again, I do think it's kind of a double-edged sword with developers. You know, they're not in the business of losing money either, so they have to stay, you know, in the black ink and not the red ink. But again, if that means, you know, taking a little bit of extra time to secure the financing to get that, that's the case. The other positive of that, though, moving slow here in Memphis, from other markets that I've worked in, there's much more of a conversation between developers and community and stakeholders as far as what's needed and, you know, how can we make this project work. Part of that is because you don't have access to as much state funding as some other markets do. Historic tax credits is also a factor in play with that as well. So you have to get creative, and that forces everybody to kind of slow down. Of course, the negative side of that, the visceral side of that, is not seeing any work done.
Well, and construction, one thing we haven't talked about is construction costs that have gone up. All the supply chain issues we heard about because of COVID. Yeah, I do think there's a big emphasis on, you know, community input here, and I'm not from Memphis either, but people are, I think there's a certain, in terms of these big projects, there's a certain cynicism about people being problems. I mean, you still hear about Sidney Schlenker and the pyramid, and that's like way, I've lived here for probably 30 years. That's way before my time. But every, I mean, you probably see probably comments on your article. This is just another Sidney Schlenker, and who's gonna, you know, leave us holding the bag, and which of course he did. But people have very long memories.
Yeah. No, I with the walk too, I will say the two Hilton brand hotels in that project too. I think again, same kind of grace. They, you know, still within their closing deadlines. Everything still seems to be moving forward with that. You know, it did take quite some time to collect all the property they needed for that. And again, you know, project scopes, construction costs, all that changes too. So those are all behind the scenes kind of things too. But as long as Hilton still doesn't pull the brands, I don't think there's any reason to stress about that. I think, you know, my hair would stand up, and as far as I go, this might be the deal if, you know, Hilton pulled out, but that hasn't been the case. It's again kind of like the shining light with the Grand Hyatt, and, you know, Hyatt still believes in that space there. They have two properties there already, including, you know, Captured by Hyatt, which I don't think Memphis market completely understands sometimes too. That was the first of its kind, which is, you know, it's a big deal itself. But again, it was supposed to be a trifecta, so there's a bit of a missing point, and it does leave a point for cynicism when you see essentially an empty lot, especially.
Well, people do get tired of that, of course. But, you know, while there's a couple projects that, big projects that haven't really moved, 2023 saw movement on a couple of projects that have really been in the works for a long time, and which is really exciting to see movement on those. And so let's just talk about those, a couple of those. One, of course, being the Sterrick Building,
yes,
which has been vacant, which is, you know, iconic in Memphis. It's been vacant forever. A lot of it had to do with issues we won't go into about land leases and things that, but I think a lot of people thought that eventually that was going to have to be torn down. And it's not. It's been acquired and it's being redeveloped. And so share a little bit about that. There's been a lot of, you know, news coverage about it. But, I mean, what excites you about it?
I mean, one, it's a beautiful property. I think it has one of the best nicknames for any building that at least I've covered or market I've been in, Queen of the South, is just something majestic about that name in general. But the big thing, the tricky part was that was the lease situation, because the land and the building were on two separate leases. It was a 99-year lease as well. So Stuart Harris, the developer behind it, Constellation Properties, his firm, we've also redeveloped the nearby Commonwealth building.
Which was beautiful.
So they're pretty well received in the community, from my understanding. And again, that's definitely no timeline on that. They're taking their time and going to do their due diligence properly. But it's a big get. That building could have easily went a different way, especially with how the lease structure was. And also, too, you know, Downtown Memphis Commission, you know, being involved with that. I know Brett Roller, you always see his name, Tech Entrepreneur with me, another big one is there as well. A lot of behind-the-scenes work, I think, too, as far as discussions and wanting to preserve that. And I will say, too, with Memphis and the inventory here with all the historic buildings, to me, that's one of Memphis's great strengths, is you have all this natural character to where if you can essentially create not the insular portion of Crosstown, but essentially create that mixed use in the skyscraper like Asteric and also 100 North Main, and then that infill, that's kind of coming back to the original topic of the Convention Center Hotel. That density is that's where all that fits in.
Yep.
So where, okay, you might not have a Convention Center Hotel or a secondary 300, 400 room hotel directly next door to the Convention Center, but you have all this density and you have all this activity in between to where that mile stretch to Convention Center down to One Beale.
You don't even notice it.
Exactly.
It's activated. It's activated.
And that's the difficult part, I think, to see for a lot of these projects. And again, that's Memphis has been on momentum in the upswing for some time, but it still takes quite a bit. You know, I'm from Lehigh Valley in Eastern PA. The Bethlehem Steel was, you know, this is just kind of wasteland. Bethlehem Steel closed when I was a kid, and then basis vacant for most of my adolescence, and then it got turned into Sands Casino, and an event center came through, and now it's, you know, a burgeoning kind of area of conference and all that, but it took some time, but that's much different too, because it doesn't necessarily connect, but talking about a blighted property, then finding new purpose. For Memphis, I don't think there's been another downtown I've lived and worked in that has all the historic properties still in place and pretty much all in good shape as well, to where you can come and activate, and that is a strength and
a
story to tell there as well that other communities don't have.
Well, I've heard that that, you know, in the wake of Dr. King's assassination, the city was so hollowed out, everyone just fled. So in other cities, stuff was torn down and replaced, and no one ever did that here. It just, things just got mothballed, and I don't know if that's, you know, sort of legend or that's really why it happened that way, but I agree with you. People don't realize we have an amazing inventory of historic properties here, not necessarily all like the Sterrick building, but you mentioned the Durman building, and which also has been vacant forever.
So now, I've only been here 2 years, but a big reason why I wanted to come out here, again, originally moved out here to work with the Daily Memphian, and now I'm here at the Commercial Appeal, but the big reason I wanted to stay in Memphis was, again, the business economic reporter lens. I've never been able to grow with a city at the same time of the upward trend usually coming in. When it's already kind of started or going, and to kind of see and live in a city as it's, you know, rediscovering itself as fast.
Yeah, I think that's very cool that you did that. I think there is an opportunity there to sort of be there while it happens.
And again, with Memphis too, that not losing its character, I think, is a big thing. We talk about kind of everybody coming back out of the pandemic and, you know, economic situations, everything else. Memphis, in a weird way, is kind of still rediscovering itself. 70-some years later, I'm almost 80 now, after MLK's assassination, unfortunately. The positives to that, at least I shouldn't say positives to that, but in the case of the pandemic and the positives, the other flood we've seen from other communities going to the suburbs and folks getting out of urban areas during the pandemic, at least, from what I've seen with Memphis, since it still didn't really recover fully, there was still this upward momentum. Again, going back to the Convention Center as well, leisure travel is a big factor to, you know, post-pandemic resurgence as well, but the infill is the big factor there to really capitalize. And I mean, I think compared to Louisville Convention Center Hotel, I mean, they have fewer events. I think it was like 42 groups in 2022 over 100,000 hotel rooms, about 66, almost 67 million as far as economic impact. Memphis, in comparison, though, it was 142 events, 72,000 hotel rooms, and 60 million as far as economic impact. So it's, again, just looking at the rooms,
right,
one dumb almost. If you have that infill there, you're activating a lot more and you're getting that resurgence back in, which is a big, big factor. But the momentum is there because Memphis never had that post-pandemic flood that some other markets have that aren't really recovering.
Right. Well, in historic preservation, historic buildings are a driver of tourism itself. I mean, there's a tourism dividend when you restore historic buildings.
Yeah,
well, so
it's an entry point. It's a reasonable conversation. And if you come to a new town, you want to learn about, you know, where you're having a cocktail at, and, you know, the place of the stair, 100 North Main. You know, if there is a story to tell there, and you still have some of the, you know, old architecture or the old facades, that's something people attach to, and they want to come back and share a story to. The tricky part is, you know, you leave a spot, and then it's like, where do you go then? I always kind of make a joke with, you know, other journalists, you know, folks involved and everything else, but Memphis does kind of have a two-front battle. It's how do you get folks to invest their money here from a development standpoint, to where it basically might take you 2-3 months here compared to 2-3 weeks in Nashville.
Right.
And then it's how do you get folks in East Memphis to come downtown and, you know, not just park and pull up to where they want to go, but how do you get them to walk around and explore?
And spend money.
Yeah. And that, I do think, is still a tricky thing. And, you know, I think people like their comfort zones out here from those to Memphis. Good at that. That's not necessarily unique, but we're talking about redeveloping a downtown. That is a tricky hurdle.
I agree. Well, you mentioned 100 North Main. Let's talk a little bit about that, because one of the funny things about that is, of course, people don't think of that as a historic building, but I think it was recently added to the National Register of Historic Places because I think it's 50 years old.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that project. I thought one of the really interesting things about it, and you mentioned earlier you really had to be creative. What I'm remembering is I think the city bought it, and then the city had to buy it. I mean, it was a white elephant. City had to buy it. And then sometimes the public sector has to take a big risk. And because desperate times call for desperate measures, right? So what about that project was exciting to you? And what do you look forward to seeing as it gets redeveloped?
I think with both that and the Steric, I mean, again, keeping two iconic landmarks, the two essentially tallest buildings really in the historic skyline, you know, in a position to be renovated and restored is, you know, that's a win in itself. I mean, that's fascinating. The Steric, all things considered, is, in my opinion, toying through both of them walking through. I think it's a little bit better shape in some areas, in some capacities, even though it's older. And again, I think that's just kind of the urban looking component with 100 North Main. I think a lot of folks decided to, you know, break windows, climb through there. A little bit unfortunate, but to see that activated and really become a connecting spot, you know, again, talk about the convention center, you know, South Main, downtown. To have that back online, it's a talking point, and, you know, no former mayor, Jim Strickland, would always say, you know, it says Memphis is open for business.
Well, I mean,
anecdotal to a degree, sure, but it activates, you know, more than just that block. That's the big factor. Same thing with the Steric, and again,
well, 100 North Main is right by Civic Center Plaza,
yeah.
You know, by all of the federal building and City Hall. That's 100 North Main is like a block away. And so it says something about a city. I think the city, you know, people can argue all day long about how they want their tax dollars used. But I personally think it was the right thing for the city. Obviously, that's what it took to make the deal happen. And but it's right there. You can't just sit, like you said, are you open for business, or is your business boarded up?
Yeah, for sure. And I also think, too, an easy way to kind of connect the dots with momentum with those buildings, with 100 North Main and Steric, you know, and even Northside Square and Uptown. You look at what the Crosstown is, and the Crosstown is a national, you know, example of adaptive reuse. And Memphis can essentially do that with Hunter North Main and the Steric and then the property. You have now four categories to where, I mean, you're creating multiple entrance points. It's not just residential. You have multiple businesses in there. In the case of Hunter North Main, you're going to have condos. You're going to have over 15,000 square feet of office space for the city. You're going to have a hotel. You have a restaurant concept as well. There's a whole lot going on in activity just in that tower itself, essentially a vertical neighborhood. Again, we don't quite know if the Steric plans, you know, likely something similar. But again, to build two vertical neighborhoods like that, and, you know, the scope of Crosstown is amazing. But again, Northside Square is not to be...
Oh, yeah, well, don't... We're getting ahead of me.
But, I mean, a very similar thing. And I don't know a single other market that, you know, is working on, you know, two of projects like that, other than three. I mean, nobody has one as an example. I mean, that's absolutely fascinating. And, again, foresight can be difficult and change can be scary for sure. But those are the projects that, you know, are going to be catalytic. And, you know, we have the Falls Building also being turned back into residential. New York development team out there, Left Lane Development, done a bunch of projects in Nashville. I actually believe they're working with the Church Street project as well out there. But again, that is a residential one still. You're talking about a 10-story building that has activity and density. And that's kind of where that convention center component comes into it.
Yep.
Density component, which also gets done on the residential side. But you need folks walking around downtown.
No question. I completely agree with you. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Memphis Metropolis on WYXR 91.7 FM. And I'm talking to Neil Strebig, and we're talking about some interesting real estate projects and developments of the last year. And then in a few minutes, we're just going to be looking ahead to talk about some emerging trends this year. But you, Neil, you mentioned Northside Square. So I want to talk about a couple of community projects. I mean, Northside Square, and for people that don't know, Northside Square is the redevelopment of Northside High School, which is a, you know, historically important high school in the Klondike Smoky City neighborhood, which is a very low-income neighborhood. The school has been closed for a long time, and it is being redeveloped by The Works and a bunch of other partners. And one of the things you mentioned earlier about, you mentioned Crosstown earlier in Northside, and, you know, I don't think people always realize, like, how some of these projects are just so, it takes so many funding sources and partners, and I would say, like, Crosstown, you know, there was masking tape as part of that, but they call the capital stack, all the funding, was masking tape was holding it all together, only because, you know, everything, you've got tax credits, you've got infrastructure dollars, and Northside's the same way.
No, and that's, I think it's easy to kind of forget how much comes into play with all these projects as well, but that was kind of my point with, you know, things do move slower in Memphis for sure, but the positive of that is you do get a lot more community feedback, a lot more stakeholders in play. Of course, you know, you can talk about projects that, you know, don't have shovels in them quite yet, and it seems like it's negative, but, you know, why I brought up, you know, Belgium Steel and, you know, my hotel, we have Valley Area, and that took years, decades really, for that to get going, and there was still a lot of negativity, and the idea of a casino coming in there, and, you know, it turned into a burden economic factor, and again, major source for jobs, tourism revenue, all of that. But again, it took time, and there's a lot of negativity around that. I think the unique thing with Memphis with some of these projects, because there's a nostalgia component, especially with Northside High, and talking about, you know, predominantly black neighborhood, impoverished neighborhood as well, being able to design something like that and, you know, rebirth into another commodity again, and also still keep to its roots as far as vocational training with more tech there, having a lot of black-owned businesses already coming in. I mean, that is insanely important for Memphis, State MD, and also for that neighborhood especially as well. But the larger scheme of that, I think sometimes it's tougher to see kind of the impact that Memphis has and the way it can carve out. Like, again, I don't know any other market Memphis' size that is, you know, making moves like that and has projects in the pipeline like this, to where, you know, this conversation 10 years from now, hopefully all three projects are complete, finished, fully activated, fully leased. I mean, you're probably talking about New York Times, Washington Post coming in, then parachuting in, taking, you know, commercial appeal, the other Memphis, beautiful, healthy local news ecosystem we have here too, and then being like, oh, how did this happen overnight in Memphis? And, you know,
well, it happened overnight. I mean, but you know as well as anybody. I mean, there was vision and a lot of hard work, especially, you know, a project like Sterik, you think like, you hope someday a private developer was going to come along and do it. But Northside High was not a prime development opportunity. That was vision and tenacity and the ability to go out and bring money into Memphis from funders that weren't already here and tell that story. It's just really, it's thrilling to see those kind of projects happen.
No, for sure. And I think in my future with Northside Square, Rashawn Austin with The Works, I mean, she mentioned that. I remember, you know, touring the facility with her. It was myself and Abadiah Christopher Day. And, you know, they essentially mentioned that, you know, it was costing them money to essentially pursue it, but, you know, she saw the vision there, knew the importance, and, you know, doubled down and, you know, hedged her bets. And, you know, hats off to, you know, her or any developer, in my opinion, for that matter, that, you know, has the commitment and conviction to stand behind and be like, hey, we have to save this property. It, and you saw that on North Main. We're seeing it in Sterik, and we're seeing it in a lot of different historic buildings here in Memphis. And that's what I think is very unique and sometimes gets overlooked when projects don't come online right away. You don't see. There's a lot of folks that are, you know, betting on Memphis and, you know, spending a lot more money to see things get to a finish line. And I do think a big conversation point, too, you know, talk about the walk and the pinch. Hypothetically, even if those projects didn't get done, or any of the projects we're talking about don't get done, the fact that permitting and all that investment's already there to where someone could essentially pick up and then still carry on, and the project changes in scope, but all the zoning, all that initial due diligence, that's insanely important to get these projects in a position to capitalize on them and renovate them. And I do think that sometimes gets lost in the ether of some of these conversations.
Definitely. But the thing about Northside Square, before we move on, ultimately any real estate deal, even a nonprofit one, has to be profitable. But most projects, I mean, even the ones that have a great community engagement process, you know, they're looking at what's the market, what do people want to buy? And then taking that information and figuring out how the deal works to make the numbers work. But in Northside, Rashawn and her team are going out and saying, what does the community need? What kind of restaurant do they want? Although I'm sure that's part of it. What do they want? What do they need to be more financially viable and for the families to be strengthened? And then you're trying to figure out how to make the numbers work. And of course, there's a lot of subsidy and, you know, grants and all that kind of thing. But it's just really coming at it from that perspective just adds an extra level of challenge and then, of course, an extra level of accomplishment when it happens to me.
No, for sure. For guys who's saying, like, they could have easily walked away and been like, hey, numbers don't match, and did have that conviction doubled down. And again, I do think a big factor, too, especially Northside Square, in comparison to other projects we've talked about, it is a huge factor representation-wise there for Klondike as well. And that's, you know, history that is something that I can't necessarily talk about in great detail. I didn't experience that, but representation does go a long way with that. To have, you know, Rashawn leading that, and probably, persons of color and, you know, a woman-led team there, that is huge. That
yep.
is absolutely huge. And
with a track record at this point, which really helps in terms of bringing in partners from outside Memphis.
Yeah. So, but like I said, like, the one thing I will say, if all these projects do come online, again, you know, I made the joke with WAPO and New York Times coming in, Parachute Journalism kind of thing, but that's the national lens, if all this stuff does come to fruition, you know, essentially beyond Memphis, and hopefully it's talking about adaptive reuse and, you know, Memphis not being able to lose itself. And, you know, we do kind of have the case study in comparison with Nashville close by, where you kind of saw the levees break with investment in Nashville and just coming in just to build and, you know, redevelop. And you see a lot of historic buildings kind of get lost in Nashville, Marathon Building kind of being the exception there, and knocking things down to build new. If Memphis can, again, you know, preserve the...
Do it right.
Sterik, Northside High, and find multiple uses in essentially vertical neighborhoods. And, you know, what ultimately before big things with the crosstown, the old Sears building, that is absolutely amazing. And again, you know, another community that has that. And the plus side of that is you don't lose the neighborhood components and the integrity Memphis has and that pride, because there's that civic pride in Memphis. Bigger than I want to be here, but it's palpable, and you don't see that in communities. There's something that people attach to, and still having that nostalgic component to these historic buildings. That's that national lens and that talking point that gets people that want to come visit and hopefully, you know, stay, not just spend their money, but hopefully invest their money.
Well, it's you're right. I mean, sometimes slowing down benefits the final product, because we do hear people support redevelopment, but people don't want what they've seen in Nashville. So while all these projects were happening over the past year, you know, a lot of things, as always, played out at the neighborhood level. And you know, I was on the Land Use Control Board for a while, which is, you know, the equivalent of the local planning commission, and, you know, street closures and property extensions and you know, site plans and all that kind of stuff that really affects a lot of people on a day-to-day basis. And I always wanted to talk briefly about a couple of those. And most of those don't get elevated to the level of you're going to write an article about them in the paper necessarily, although some do. But a couple got quite a bit of publicity, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on them. One was the effort to redevelop a church in a small church in the Evergreen neighborhood that's been vacant for quite some time. It's in the middle of a residential neighborhood. It's been surprisingly controversial, surprising to me anyway. So talk a little bit, tell people about that if they haven't read your articles, and then what you think some of the issues are.
Yeah, 1663 Autumn Avenue is the property you're talking about. In the Evergreen neighborhood. There's a development plan to convert that into 10 apartments and then a cafe bakery space on the first floor. That got rejected. Memphis-based Connect Design came through with other plans too, that also actually just got rejected last month as well.
The second plan did get rejected.
It did, yes. So
talk a little bit about what you think the issue, not what's the latest information, but what you think the issues are from the community perspective. How about that?
1663?
Yeah.
Again, I think with 1663 Autumn Avenue, it's a case of good and bad. Can there be more conversation from developer standpoint and community? I think you can always have more conversation no matter what. I'm not going to, you know, say there is or isn't. I think you have a very passionate group that has an idea to keep that perhaps residential, or, you know, last meeting, they discussed a residential component with still keeping a church space and activity. There's concerns about traffic. I think what does get lost in the issue there is, you know, that building isn't in environmental court, and more than likely, the longer nothing gets done, it's going to get knocked down. And it's a corner property, but I'm not sure if you're going to make any sort of community investment if it isn't knocked down and turned into just residential. That would be good for some folks' property values, perhaps, sure, but the know, chance to take a historic property as it is and renovate it, that would be lost, essentially. So
I do think it will ultimately, to me, it seems like if this particular development doesn't go forward, I think it probably will be torn down. Because the property was bought by someone who, I don't think he paid much for it, but who bought it because he wanted to see it redeveloped.
Yeah.
And saw it as a neighborhood asset and wanted to see it redeveloped. And so I do see it getting torn down. And if that's what the neighbors want, if they feel like, you know, a nice, of course, it's probably going to be multifamily. And, you know, how people feel about that.
I'm not sure if it gets it torn down. I don't think it would be multifamily. I don't know anybody that's going to be able to. Most of the conversations there are concerned about traffic. So if it is multifamily, they're going to be concerned about commercial traffic there. And parking, you're going to have the same amount of parking space.
So it'll be one giant house.
Yeah, and again, I'm not sure if you're going to be able to build that. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean the rest of your property value is going to go up either. Again, I think it's good to have passionate neighbors and residents discussion. You know, it's kind of a case of, I think both sides, you know, right and wrong. You know, I haven't been present at all the meetings and discussions, but I do think it's good to have passionate groups that.
Well, there's good people. Things. There's good people on both sides. I know some of the people on the development team, and they're, you know, good people that want to do the right thing for the neighborhood. Nice. But the neighbors, yeah, they feel, a lot of them feel very strongly about it.
No, for sure, and I think they definitely made their voices heard more than most on small projects like this, and they're very passionate about it. And again, I think it's a case to where you have a building that has been vacant for quite some time and hasn't necessarily been developed or any plans come forward. So I do think it's one of those things too of at least there are plans in motion, but again, opposite side of this is that there is a timeline. Thinking about mental courts, the longer there is delay and nothing is brought forward, more likely it is going to be demoed. And I don't think anyone's going to, whatever they envision is not going to happen if it is demoed. And again, from a developer standpoint too, it probably is much easier to demo it and then just build new. So I do think that also does get lost in translation sometimes too with all development in Memphis. It is a lot more difficult to store properties. People realize, especially without access to state historic tax credits and some other markets, there's a lot more that comes through. And I think incentives here in Memphis tend to have a negative connotation as well. But again, talk about the national comparison. Memphis does not get the same amount of state money that Nashville does. And, you know, a lot of private investors with deeper pockets aren't flooding Memphis the same way they do in Nashville. Again, different reasons for why the market's there. But without that help, you need some sort of assistance to get things started. On incentives here, it's not free money. It's just allowing you to invest and start, and then ultimately property taxes and the real estate value increases, and hopefully that's the way for everybody, hopefully, in the long run.
So one of these kind of neighborhood issues that we've talked about is the desire for the Chickasaw Gardens neighborhood to close some streets. And so talk a little bit about that, and because that's been quite controversial, and of course people really get worked up about things.
And I'm sure it's quite a NIMBY situation, but it essentially would have caused everybody to come to Chickasaw Gardens through Central Avenue in order to shut down two entrances there and been gated unless it's an emergency vehicle. And the big conversation there was, people were kind of speeding through. It's not too it's too dangerous to kind of walk. And, you don't want necessarily folks coming in and, being, suspect individuals within the neighborhood. I don't live in Chickasaw Gardens, so I can't quite, talk about from the neighborhood.
Well, it's not a lot of traffic. I mean, it's not like a place where there's a lot of, I don't live there either, but, I mean, I've been there many times. There's not a lot of speeding. In fact, I think at one time there was some speeding and they closed one of the north-south streets.
Well, I think it's a good example with, again, the neighborhood level with projects that do get a bit more attention than some of the multi-million dollar stuff like we see a lot in the downtown development. I think it's kind of, again, what do you see your Memphis as? And I think the Chickasaw Gardens is an example. You have some folks that see it as an open community. People walk, driving through. Again, you don't want to bottleneck traffic, which I do think the decision there was, to reject it was concerns about how people get in and get out. And then you are going to cause more congestion because only fewer entrance points and exits. But I do think from a resident standpoint, some of the conversations there and concerns with, is it too dangerous? You can't walk. Crime's always a factor and discussion point, a hot topic in Memphis. It is kind of, again, how do you see your neighborhood? How do you see your backyard in Memphis? And I think perhaps some folks want to see a gated community for their respective backyards. Others want to still see it be an inclusive neighborhood where people can walk and, converse freely.
But there's public streets. I mean, there's public streets that are taught there. And I don't know enough about it to have an opinion, but there's public streets and then there's a park in there that's essentially a public park. And I guess it wouldn't be completely closed off, but access would be somewhat reduced.
No, for sure. And I think that's what it comes down to is, NIMBY, I think, has a negative connotation on both sides, too. And I think, unfortunately, the knee-jerk reaction, no matter what community you're in, so I don't want to necessarily group it in that. But from a neighborhood standpoint, from what I understand with Memphis and when I report on what I see, it does come down to kind of different definitions of how people see their Memphis currently and what they want to see their Memphis go. And I do think
who they want to see in their neighborhood.
Yeah, and again, I think there's a lot of layers to peel back from that. But you know, that being rejected, I think it still at least preserves the public access to a park. I do think that was a big portion as well, plus traffic congestion. I think it might have possibly actually caused more issues having the entrance points there.
And that was rejected.
It was. I think it was 4-3 and then abstention.
Okay, Neil, so last question. And just sort of looking in your crystal ball for 2024, are there any important trends in terms of redevelopment or commercial real estate that we haven't talked about that you feel like are going to be impactful, or big stories that haven't gotten a lot of coverage but you think you're going to be covering?
I mean, I think adaptive reuse is always going to be the big topic here. I think 2022 is the first time adaptive reuse from a national lens outpaced new construction. Memphis has been a target market for a lot of available space inventory, especially with office conversions. We're seeing office conversions to residential. Here in the office here, commercial appeal, I mean, right above us, Pembroke here, you know, that's being converted from office space into residential.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that. Pembroke Square.
So that's, yeah, redoing some of the components. We talked about the Falls building. I mean, that's going to be office to residential. So
that's a big trend you see continuing downtown, offices getting converted into residential.
Nationally, it's been office and hotels. So which again, to our original topic with the hotel issue, the small hotels, not to be negative Nancy or again, foresight, you don't really know what's going to happen, but if you don't have the density to fill all the small hotels, you don't have the infill to get people, keep them here in Memphis and supporting local businesses all throughout downtown, then you kind of have that idea for the boutique hotels will essentially, close up, and then you're going to have that conversation again as far as we convert it, all hotel spaces into a possible eventual get that density. That, but again, that's getting into the weeds, and again, that's foresight.
I didn't bring my bell.
So I think some other trends then too, it's the retail commercial side of things. Downtown Mobility Center, still looking for tenants on the ground floor there. It's a huge downtown space there, and prime real estate as well for local business. But I do think a lot of the retail side of things, you're seeing some issues as far as securing tenants. And there's, again, compound issues there as far as interest, tenant improvements.
And that's a long time issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been
an
issue.
It's very subjective as well.
But retailers are, going away, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I had Sean Massey from Shopping Center Proof Bond probably more than a year ago. We talked about this and about how there's more trend toward experiences in retail spots like escape room kinds of things. But a lot of chains are just going away. I mean, Main Street, downtown Main Street in Memphis has always been challenged. But it sounds like you're seeing just even more of that. These mixed-use properties mixed-use properties almost always have a retail component.
Well,
right?
You need that. You want a coffee shop or a brewery, whatever it be, a bike shop, whatever it may be. You want something for the residents to, populate and flock to it and have something there, too. And if it's in a downtown core, you want people to also travel to it as well. Again, the retail component is a very subjective thing because, each of those situations, each of those locations is different, poses its own challenges. So it's not a solution to that. That's like one-size-fits-all kind of deal. For Memphis, though, I will say that I do think the big challenge is getting people to kind of get out of their comfort zones and come back downtown and, again, not just park and go to the spot you want to go and explore and see, but the other component of that, too, if you do have vacant spaces or empty buildings, I do think that creates the seed of doubt in someone's mind to where if you're not from Memphis, they've heard negative things, then they make them pause to explore. You want all the infill activated so people do have that curiosity to where, you see a full bar and like, hey, let's go check that out.
Well, and a lot of times people, they haven't been downtown or to Midtown for that matter in decades. And they remember when it was the Orpheum and the Peabody and nothing else.
Yeah.
And then, but, and now you go downtown and you have to pay to park.
Yeah.
Just like I want to say, like, have you ever been anywhere else?
Yeah, it's still very, very cheap here too. And,
I know.
My friends at Cooper Young, and they would ask me all the time, like, how's downtown? It's like, take the 10-minute drive. I don't know. Don't even get me started about that.
So
I think that's something that, again, is a very local battle and emphasis to have. And, you know, go back to the two front scenario I talked about as far as getting investment here, and then also the local perception to get folks back downtown and explore. I mean, if local Memphians aren't, you know, embracing downtown and exploring and supporting local businesses, then how do you expect out-of-towners to do that and fall in love with the city we all love it for? That's the big challenge, and again, that does take time, and sometimes it's as simple as getting all these developments to be activated, and then, you know, it's kind of the high tide, so to speak, but then
right.
You have this idea like, oh my God, Memphis is, you know, this beautiful talking point again. But I do think need more folks supporting more local businesses and embracing the downtown community a bit more.
I completely agree. So if you're listening and you haven't embraced the core of Memphis, get down here. Spend some money and appreciate the urban fabric, all the great buildings and businesses we have here. And I agree with you because developers, I mean, people have to, the projects, again, have to be profitable. And profitable projects means customers. So it's sort of a two, yeah, it's just two sides of it. Well, Neil, we're going to have to, this is great. I feel like we could talk forever, but we're going to have to leave it there. So you've been listening to Memphis and Petropolis on WYXR 91.7 FM. I've been talking to Neil Strebig, who is with the Commercial Appeal. He's a reporter covering real estate and economic development. We've been talking about all kinds of interesting real estate development stories. So thanks for coming on the program, Neil. You've been listening to Memphis Metropolis on WYXR 91.7 FM. I'm Emily Trenum. Memphis Metropolis airs every Monday at 1, so please tune in again next week. You can listen to past programs on our program page at wyxr.org or on memphismetropolis.com. You can also follow us and send feedback on social media. Now, stay tuned for Memphis Undercover with Nancy.